This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America. Your source for Pan-African news and world developments, I'm Kim Lewis in Washington, and coming up on Africa News Tonight.
Inside the camp called Moria, there are right now around 8,800 persons. And the capacity in this camp is for 3,000 people. So it's at triple its capacity.
That's Marion Bouchetel, an Oxfam advocacy officer. We'll have full details on this story coming up. Also, a new revised peace agreement is now in place between South Sudan's warring parties to end the country's five-year civil war. World leaders and royalty paid their final respects to one of Africa's most famous diplomats, Kofi Annan, at his funeral in his home country of Ghana. And Sudanese President Omar al-Bashir swears in a new prime minister in a bid to ease the country's economic crisis. We'll have these stories and more all ahead on Africa News Tonight. South Sudan's warring parties have signed what they say is a final peace agreement aimed at ending the civil war that has killed tens of thousands of people and displaced millions. The deal was signed yesterday in the presence of Ethiopia's Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed and his counterparts from the region, along with foreign diplomats. Some residents of Juba Town say they are cautiously optimistic, given that past peace efforts have fallen apart. They're desperate and tired of war, and they hope their leaders have learned from their mistakes. But some are skeptical, given that jubilation has turned to frustration before. Major challenges loom, including a real lasting peace, the return of displaced people, and jobs from an economy that has been stunted by years of conflict. And massive investment is needed for infrastructure, education, health services, and communications. World leaders and royalty paid their final respects to one of Africa's most famous diplomats, Kofi Annan, at his funeral in his home country of Ghana. It is the climax of 3 days of mourning, which saw over 6,000 Ghanaians pay tribute by walking past his coffin as it lay in state in the capital, Accra. Annan died on August 18th in Switzerland at the age of 80. He was UN Secretary General from 1997 to 2006, the first black African to hold the world's top diplomatic post. He was awarded the Nobel Peace Prize in 2001 for helping to revitalize the international body during a period that coincided with the Iraq War and the HIV/AIDS pandemic. The current UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres spoke at the funeral, saying Kofi Annan was both one of a kind and one of us.
He was an exceptional global leader. And he was also someone virtually anyone in the world could see themselves in. Those on the far reaches of poverty, conflict and despair, who always found in him an ally. The junior UN staffer following in his footsteps. The young person to whom he said until his dying breath, and I quote, "Always remember, you are never too young to lead, and we are never too old to learn." Like few in our time, Kofi Annan could bring people together, put them at ease, and unite them towards a common goal for our common humanity. There is an old joke. The art of diplomacy is to say nothing, especially when you are speaking. Kofi Annan could say everything, sometimes without uttering a word.
There was also a moving tribute by his wife, Swedish lawyer and artist Nanne Maria Annan. She described her husband was always excited to return home and thanked Ghana for giving the world such an extraordinary man.
I remember how excited he always was returning home, home to Ghana. On arrival, he would draw in the air, feel the scents, and he would look so happily content. I always believed that his inner strength and sense of whole came from his deep roots here. And I want to thank Ghana for giving us such an extraordinary human being. His legacy will live on in his foundation and in all of us. My love, you are now back home where you started your long journey. May you rest in peace, that may your wisdom and compassion continue to inspire us and guide our steps wherever we are.
Nane Maria Annan. In addition, the former Queen of the Netherlands, Princess Beatrix, and her daughter-in-law, Princess Mabel, who were close friends of Annan, were among the mourners. The King of Ghana's Asante people awarded Annan the title Bosumuru in 2012 to honor his role as an international diplomat. The aid group Oxfam is calling for relief for up to 20,000 migrants held on several Greek islands off the coast of Turkey. Oxfam says nearly 11,000 are on Lesbos, most in the Moria camp. It and other sites are overcrowded. Migrants from Syria, Iraq, Afghanistan, and Africa live in tents or trailers amid harsh weather conditions, poor sanitation, and limited access to medical services. Migrants often wait more than a year, usually without legal assistance, to have their asylum papers processed. Marion Bouchetel is an Oxfam advocacy officer in Lesbos who spoke with VOA's William Eagle about the difficult living conditions.
Inside the camp called Moria, there are right now around 8,800 persons, and the capacity in this camp is for 3,000 people, so it's at triple its capacity. Due to this overcrowding, the living conditions are dreadful, but the services are very limited on the island, and basically we notice more and more reports of cases of sexual abuse and mistreatment in the camp, but we also are aware of violence and riots, inter-community fights that are regular due to this overcrowding and also due to the frustration that the asylum process creates. People are complaining apart from the lack of security and the fact that it's dangerous, especially for women and children. People are complaining about the lack of hygiene and the risk for public health. There was recently a decision from the regional governor of the Northern Aegean explaining that the sewage system in this camp was not adequate and was basically a risk for environment but also for public health. The fact that there are too many people by tents and by container is also a risk for the spreading of diseases. And also, of course, there are problems with access to medical services because, again, there are a few actors present that make their best efforts, but they are not enough.
What is the response of authorities to these complaints of overcrowding?
The Greek Ministry of Migration Policy announced in June, so at the beginning of the summer, that new accommodation sites would be created on the mainland to be able to transfer people from the hotspot on the islands to the mainland to host them in more dignified and safe conditions. But this hasn't happened until now, so basically these promised measures are still pending. And the decision from the regional governor that I mentioned just before is another example to, well, remind the Ministry of Migration Policy that people should be transferred off the islands to release the pressure and offer adequate accommodation and protection, more than anything, for vulnerable people. This is a response that is basically still on hold. We are waiting to see how the Greek government will implement this announcement that were made at the beginning of the summer and hopefully transfer people as much as possible. This is not new. This happened already in December 2017, not at the same level of overcrowding, but already the conditions were extremely bad and denounced by many NGOs and actors. And then, well, the government transferred, developed more accommodation on the Greek mainland and transferred people from the islands to the mainland. So we hope this will happen again, but this should happen as a matter of emergency very quickly.
The European Union plans to set up so-called controlled centers for refugees and migrants. They're also talking about establishing processing centers in individual African countries in sub-Saharan Africa. What is Oxfam's response? Would this help take care of the problem?
These plans would be a recipe for failure The controlled centers for refugee and migrants inside Europe would basically, from what we understand until now, because we lack information yet on the exact parameters and features of these controlled centers, we believe that it would be installing de facto detention center inside Europe and basically replicating a model that is very similar to the EU hotspots that we see here in Lesbos, for example, and that it is obviously a system that is not working. Regarding the disembarkation platform in third countries outside of Europe, we also believe that it would be difficult for the European Union to find agreements with these countries. And we believe that it wouldn't allow people to have their claim for international protection properly examined and analyzed or decided upon.
That was Marion Bouchetel of the aid group Oxfam speaking with VOA's William Eagle. Sudanese President Omar al-Bashir has sworn in a new prime minister in a bid to ease the country's economic crisis. Austerity moves will include a smaller cabinet as the country grapples with an acute foreign exchange shortage and inflation above 65%. Peter Pham is vice president of research at the Atlantic Council and director of its Africa Center. He spoke with VOA's senior analyst Mohamed El-Shanawi about the significance of the reshuffle and what Sudan needs to do to overcome its woes.
There are several things. One, it needs a little new energy into it. So I think it sends a signal that they're serious about changing the way they do business. Now, what we have to wait to see is he swore in a new prime minister, Motaz Musa, but he has not yet appointed the new cabinet in its entirety. There were 31 ministers. There will be 21. So there's going to be I think everyone's going to wait to see who remains, who comes, and how the new cabinet will be organized.
The United States has kept Sudan on its list of state sponsors of terrorism despite ending two decades of sanctions in October. Sudanese officials argue that international investors will remain wary of re-engaging in Sudan so long as the country remains on the U.S. terror watch list. Was that the main reason for Sudan's economic crisis?
Well, I think it certainly is not helpful, but most U.S. economic sanctions were removed by President Donald Trump last October. And the fact is, even without those sanctions, which freed up most sectors of the Sudanese economy for investment, it's actually a business decision on the part of many investors not to go into the market. Sudan has a notoriously difficult business environment. The World Bank's Doing Business report, which is an annual report on how easy or hard it is to business, ranks Sudan fairly badly at 170 out of 190 countries and territories surveyed. So very much near the bottom. It's an ease of doing business, and certainly that makes it difficult to invest. In terms of protecting minority investors, Sudan ranks, according to the World Bank, 186 out of 190. So these are fundamentals that I think even more than sanctions, which preclude investors, and this is what the new cabinet under the new prime minister will need to tackle.
Food prices have more than doubled since last year, causing high inflation rate in Sudan, while the Sudanese pound has plunged against the U.S. dollar. What's really needed to counter the economic crisis in Sudan?
Several things. First and foremost, economic reforms. These are not going to be easy. They're going to be painful, but that's because the economy for such a long time has been distorted. Secondly, the country needs to open up to investors by making itself easier to do business with. I think the business climate, removing economic sanctions was a significant step. Prospectively removing the terrorism sponsor designation will be another step. But even if both those things were done, without the fundamentals being addressed, it remains a problem. Another problem in Sudan is infrastructure. The country's in tremendous need of infrastructure to take advantage of any investors that might come, as well as the possibilities that the building of the Ethiopian Renaissance Dam provides for increased power, increased agriculture in the country, but needs infrastructure. And I think it's very interesting that President Bashir picked the Minister of Water, Irrigation, and Electricity to be the new prime minister.
That was Peter Pham of the Atlantic Council speaking with VOA's Mohammed Elshenawy. Coming up on 20 minutes past the hour, this is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America. A top U.S. diplomat says the United States should strengthen its ties to Ethiopia following unprecedented reforms in the nation. Tibor Naj is the newly appointed Assistant Secretary of the U.S. Bureau of African Affairs. He told a congressional hearing in Washington yesterday that new Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed deserves credit for groundbreaking reforms across most every area of Ethiopian society. But Naj also outlined a number of unresolved concerns and urged the U.S. to provide support, saying the reforms remain quite fragile. Abiy has made peace with neighboring Eritrea, kickstarting its emergence from isolation. Representative Chris Smith said Eritrea could become a critical U.S. strategic partner, and Naj welcomed Eritrea's re-emergence on the regional and global stage. But Naj also expressed significant concerns about the U.S. relationship with Eritrea, citing several issues that need to be addressed before sanctions could be lifted. A UN report finds Israel's decade-long blockade of the Gaza Strip is making it impossible for the Palestinians in the enclave to develop their economy. The UN Conference on Trade and Development warns this tiny territory could become unfit for humans to live in by 2020 if current trends are not reversed. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva, where UNCTAD has released its annual report on its assistance to the Palestinian people.
The report finds unemployment in the occupied Palestinian territory stands at 27%, the highest in the world. It says women and young people are most severely affected. UNCTAD coordinator of the assistance to the Palestinian people, Mahmoud El-Khafif, says the agricultural sector is hardest hit by the deteriorating economic situation.
There is a study indicating that the agricultural sector lost between 35 and 45% of the productivity in the agricultural sector. And as we know, the agricultural sector is the cushion for the economy, which basically absorbs the unemployed. And you can imagine the impact.
The report blames declining economic prospects in Gaza and the West Bank largely on Israeli restrictions on movement, which make it extremely difficult for Palestinians to work in Israel, and on the steep drop in donor support. The report warns living conditions in Gaza continue to worsen. It says the territory's long-standing electricity crisis has deepened, with households receiving only 2 hours of electricity a day. It says only 10% of the population has access to adequate drinking water. UNCTAD Deputy Secretary General Isabel Durand calls the situation unsustainable.
It's unsustainable because electricity, because water, because poverty, because young people and women are completely forgotten in this social development process, even cultural development process. So it's why I'm not so optimistic, even if I know that it's not new. Of course it's not new, but it's every year a little bit more difficult.
To ensure a sustainable recovery, authors of the report say Israel must lift its blockade completely, and the economies of Gaza and the West Bank must be reunified. UNCTAD says the economy of the territory could grow by up to 10% simply by removing Israeli restrictions on Palestinian trade and investment. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
In the DRC, rappers are getting involved in politics, including one well-known rap artist who hopes to fix the country's problems by running for a seat in parliament. Chika Adua reports for VOA from Kinshasa.
They do not sound like politicians. They do not look like them either. They are rappers, but they're getting ready to get political. It's a Saturday afternoon, and they have gathered, as they do every month, at a shopping center in Kinshasa to talk about how to do that. One of them goes to the stage to say that he's thinking of running for a local office. That was Lexis Legal, the most famous one in the group. He leads the charge, calling for rap artists to get involved in helping to fix Congo's problems. Do not hesitate to run for office, he says. If the national level is too high, go door to door to ask for support in your local communities, he adds. For 20 years, Lexis Legal has built a career with his socially conscious music, commenting on youth unemployment, corruption, and other social ills. And now, he is running for a seat in the national parliament.
Je tiens à rappeler et à souligner que ces choix, c'est pas une nouvelle carrière.
He says he wants his fans to know that he is not starting a new career. He is simply doing what comes natural to him. He has always been political, he says, as you can hear in his music. Politics and music are intertwined in the DRC. At the office grounds of the ruling party, singers and dancers are energized. President Joseph Kabila announced last month that he will step down after 17 years and has appointed a successor, Emmanuel Shadary. Local music artists usually make a living by supporting politicians. Jigoro Ekopo is one of the lead singers for the ruling party's music troupe. We are not musicians. We are not artists. We are politicians, Ekopo says. He says he supports President Kabila's vision. Clap for Shadary, clap for Shadary, he rallies the group. Criticism comes at a cost in the Democratic Republic of Congo, and the ruling party often stifles it. Six opposition candidates eyeing the presidency have been banned from running in the December polls. Bob Elvis, another popular rap artist, released a song lambasting the corruption of the political class. The rapper's family told VOA that 2 weeks ago he was picked up by state security forces and detained for days. VOA reached to Bob Elvis upon his release, but he is currently in hiding, though he's reaching out to his fans on Facebook. That is why some musicians decide to play it safe. Rihanna Prescott and her musical friends recently formed a band called Star Music. She says politics is too dirty. She avoids talking about it in her music. Music should be fun, she says, and that is why we do it. For Lexis Legal and other rappers in the DRC, music and politics cannot be separated. Chika Odua for VOA News, Kinshasa.
And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. For listeners on VOA's Nairobi FM station, please stay tuned for the Swahili Evening News coming up at 16:30 UTC. For all other listeners, please stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports. Tune in again at 1800 UTC for another edition of Africa News Tonight. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Xiaogun Cheng, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Hello, I'm Douglas Impoga, host of VOA's Reporters Roundtable. Join us every Thursday as we discuss important African topics and events. I'll have a panel of African journalists and expert guests to discuss the topic at hand. We take a deeper look at important African news topics. That's Reporters Roundtable every Thursday at 17:30 UTC, right here on VOA Africa.
VOAAfrica.com.
On VOAAfrica.com, the news updates never stop. Our primary goal is to keep you informed.
VOAAfrica.com, your trusted source for news and information.